UCL football fans, listen up. When you watch the UEFA Champions League with Heineken, you're never watching alone, even if you're watching alone. Heineken has teamed up with some of the world's greatest footballing legends to bring you the Heineken UCL Live. Seven legendary hosts to take you through every moment of seven unmissable UCL games, and they want you to get involved. Bring the banter and the rivalry, and you could win epic prizes. Tune in using the hashtag HeinekenUCL Live on Twitter during match nights, and don't forget to enter the competition.
T's and C's apply. Not for persons under the age of 18. Drink responsibly.
Big questions, even bigger guests. This is The Big Interview.
Good day and welcome to the SL Podcast. In honor of Heineken's sponsorship of our shows, we wanted to invite a South African legend who has played abroad in the UEFA Champions League and across leagues in Europe, as well as our national team at two World Cups. He is an absolute legend who's played for Everton, Ajax Amsterdam and Borussia Dortmund, and he has made a name for himself permanently when it comes to the English Premier League and the Eredivisie abroad in Europe. It is our honor and pleasure to be joined by Mr. Stephen Pienaar. This is The Big Interview brought to you by Heineken. Stephen, welcome to the show.
Hi guys, thanks for having me on the show.
So to hit the rewind button, when you think about your development years at the School of Excellence and the Ajax youth system, what key parts of your game were perfected in those early years?
How to manage the ball, to be comfortable on the ball at a young age, how to play in small spaces. That's what we learned at a School of Excellence, you know, to play in a crowded area where you have to maneuver through players, and also to keep your head up, know where you're going, know what's around you. You know, you have to be alert in that kind of things. And I think that helped me a lot when I moved abroad to the Netherlands. The coaches were quite surprised that my reading of the game was up there with the best, you know. And and that helped me. If you learn it at a young age, it will always affect your game.
Back then, which attacking players would you say had the biggest impact on your style of play and why?
Yeah, back then, growing up, obviously, as an Orlando Pirates supporter, I always used to look up Tebogo Homoloi, because we, you know, as a midfielder, you look at the similarities. He's a ball player, and he was like one of my heroes growing up. Also, John Muerte Dungi, the former captain of Orlando Pirates. I used to admire his game. He's the way he went about organizing the midfield. Always, you know, for a small player, he was always among getting his foot stuck in, getting into tackles, and he was comfortable on the ball as well. So that was my players back home. And in Europe, I always used to look up to Seedorf, Edgar Davids, that kind of players. Obviously, as a midfielder, you want to model your game around those kind of players. And what can you get better at? Seedorf obviously was a powerful player, technical, very good. Edgar Davids as well, the pit bull in the midfield. You know, good on the ball, have an eye for pass, and full of energy. So that was the players I admired growing up.
Now, you know, midfielders are known for their work rates, and you're no stranger to that. You're always up and down the pitch when you're on the field. You've played with the likes of Ibra, even roomed with him. But which player from Ajax or any of the teams you play for in Europe would you say had the biggest impact in terms of their work rate on the pitch? Who was the hardest working player that you played alongside?
Wow, there were so many. At the Ajax at the time, I'll say Thomas Galasek, the former Czech international and Ajax Amsterdam captain. He was an experienced player. He was, for me, at Ajax, he was the one that made everything look so simple. Working hard, always in the right place at the right time. He knew how to cover the other midfielders. Yeah, for me, he was one of the players up there. And at Ajax, I'll say, yeah, that was him. And at Everton, yeah, everyone was actually working hard, so there was the model around the team. So yeah, I can't actually pinpoint someone out at Everton, but for me, Galasek was an unbelievable player. Yeah, you were from UDA, the most hardworking player I've come across.
And now you mentioned Everton, which is perhaps your most iconic period of your career. And now, you know, we're seeing English fans, for not the best of reasons, but we're seeing a lot more of them in the public eye recently. So I wanted to ask, do you recall any funny or interesting interactions that you had with supporters in England?
I had a lot, always before the games, when we pulled up in a car park, you always had the kids around standing, waiting for the players to come. At Everton, obviously, Goodison Park is kind of an old stadium. So the supporters, they will just barricade where the players have to park, and yeah, all the fans would stand around. Sometimes, one of the players, Louis Saha at the time, we got out of our cars. We had a little chat before walking into the stadium, and one of the supporters, a young boy, he jumped over the barricades and pulled Louis Saha's cap and just took off. And we were like, wow, what's going on here? And I couldn't believe it.
All right, before we continue on with the show, just a quick word from our sponsors. UCL football fans, listen up. When you watch the UEFA Champions League with Heineken, you're never watching alone, even if you're watching alone. Heineken has teamed up with some of the world's greatest footballing legends to bring you the Heineken UCL Live. 7 legendary hosts to take you through every moment of 7 unmissable UCL games. Well, there's one more left with the Champions League final coming up, but they want you to get involved. Bring the banter and the rivalry, and you could win epic prizes. Tune in using the hashtag HeinekenUCLLive on Twitter during match nights, and don't forget to enter the competition. T's and C's apply, not for persons under the age of 18. Drink responsibly. Speaking of the Champions League, what was it like when you first got the chance to play in the UEFA Champions League with Ajax?
It was a dream come true for me as a young boy from Westbury. You always used to watch the games, AC Milan, Ajax play in the Champions League. And when I finally got that opportunity, just to walk out before a game, I remember my first game, I was on a bench. I think we played, if I'm not sure, Rosenberg at home, and I was on a bench, and we walked out, and the supporters, the atmosphere in the stadium, Ajax supporters singing to the Bob Marley song when we walked out, and then that moment when the Champions League anthem comes on, it's like you get chicken skin, the goosebumps was an unbelievable feeling, just to walk out and hear the anthem. Then you knew that this is the highest level of club football that you've reached. And for me, as a boy from Westbury, I couldn't believe it every time I walked out onto the field.
Now, having played across Europe, it's no surprise to see you involved with Heineken's UCL campaign. What have been your takeaways from this season's competition?
It's obviously Heineken always bring the game to the people, no matter where you are in the world. So that's what we enjoy about Heineken. And for me, obviously interacting with the supporters, with the fans, it's been unbelievable. The banter with the supporters on Twitter, it's been off the chart, And I really enjoy being involved, getting under skins of the fans, and and the excitement about the games. The level has been unbelievable this season.
And it's going to be an all English UEFA Champions League final. We've seen those before. Who do you see winning this tournament? Obviously Man City have been very dominant. Chelsea have been resurgent after that slow start. Who's your money on and why?
For me, I'll go for Man City pure because of Pep and the way they play. For me personally, they've been the best team across Europe this season. For a manager to come in and make a team play the way he wants them to play, that's a good attribute from the manager side. But then again, Chelsea under Thomas Tuchel has been a different Chelsea that we've seen over the last couple of months since he took over. It's going to be a tough one, and Chelsea have already beaten Man City twice, so it's a tough one. But I personally want the City to win, but it's one of those games that it can go either way, and both teams are top teams, and they deserve to be in the final.
It's going to be a hot contest on the 29th. Now, between the 2009-10 season, you perhaps had your most memorable run. You won player of the season for Everton. You came home and you represented us at the World Cup. What single moment replays in your mind the most from that period of your career?
Wow, obviously, the draw of the World Cup. I remember I was standing in the office at Everton, and when the draw came up, I was so nervous. You know, as a player that's going to represent this country on home soil, you know, I wanted an easy draw, but then when I saw it coming up, I was like, wow, this is going to be a tough one for us. You know, when I saw Uruguay coming out, Mexico, France, that was one of the toughest groups that I think in that World Cup, you know, anyone could have gone through. And obviously, just flying back home for the preparations of the World Cup, I joined the team quite late because I think it was something to do with the volcanoes in Iceland. I couldn't fly back on time. So yeah, when I got back to South Africa and when I landed at OR Tambo, when I just walked out, the people, the reception I got, you know, and I could see this is something that's really happening. The excitement about the people, the happiness. And yeah, for me, it was that moment that I realized this is something that's going to be lasting for the rest of my life. I'm going to have that memories always playing back. And I can tell my kids about that time.
100%. And it was truly a magical moment for our country. I always make the joke that we even stopped crying for that World Cup. You know, later in your career, unfortunately, you had some injuries affect you, leaving us to wonder what if. So in a perfect world, had you not had injury affect your progress, what other major accomplishments would you have been hoping for from 2011 onwards?
Obviously, my time at Tottenham. I think that's where it all started, the injuries coming. When I joined Tottenham, I think after the fourth game, I got a concussion. After the concussion recovering, I got back into playing. Played the Champions League games, the two games against AC Milan in the court. I think it was the last 16. Played well. I remember before we played AC Milan away, the day before the game, we had a session in the stadium. And I walked up to the manager and I told him, I'm like, boss, there's something that I feel in my back and my stomach, you know? I don't feel quite sharp. And he was like, oh, maybe it's just nerves. I was like, no, this is something that I've never felt before. Mm-hmm. And then I played a game against AC Milan away. I think I played 70, 75 minutes. And then I played the second game. And after that, you know, that pain that I started feeling came back. And then I just told him, like, listen, I don't know what, I've never felt this kind of pain. And we found out later that I ruptured my two hernias, both sides, and I had to go under the knife. But I think if I have to play back in my mind, I would have done the operation at the time I felt it, but I left it and I thought, you know what, I'm gonna give it to the preseason, build on it, and then I got better, and then I think I got injured with the national team also in that preseason time. I twisted my knee, and then yeah, my whole preseason was just wasn't going according to plans, and that's when everything just started falling apart, you know. And then I had to have an operation on my hernia. It took me three and a half months when I was at Spurs to get better, and when I got better, I had to move to Everton. So that also, you know, and when I was at Everton, I started playing again regularly. And I remember I got injured I think the season before Moyes left already, when Martinez came. We had a good run with the team, and then in the quarterfinals of the FA Cup against Arsenal, just by taking a normal corner, I just twisted my knee, and that's when I knew that, wow, this is not good. And then everything just went downhill from there, you know. After the operation, couldn't get back to staying fit for whole season. I think if I have to look back that moment when I was at Spurs, when I felt that first pain, I think that's when I had to put my foot down and say, listen, this is my body, I need to do it now. And you know, it could have been could have gone the other way, but yeah, you know, it's life. You learn from those things. And now, as a retired player, young coach, that's the kind of advice I can give to young players. When you feel something, just communicate with the coach and let him know this. You can feel the pain, the coach can't feel it, and just be more dominant in that. About telling the coach, you know, I think for me that would have been if I just had stopped at that time, maybe something would have gone different. Maybe my career would have gone on the way I wanted it to go. But yeah, you know, it's life. You have to learn from them, and you can't keep those bad memories forever.
True, and I mean you'll never say this. I know this, but as an Arsenal fan personally, I'm more than happy to blame Tottenham. But anyway, while playing in Europe, what's a random pastime or non-football activity that you miss from your playing days? What do players get up to that side?
Yeah, most of the players, they were into golf, always on a golf course. I got invited a couple of times, but I was more the caddy man, so I didn't fancy myself playing golf. So yeah, for me, it was just, yeah, when I wasn't playing, it was always being with a kid, being at home with a family. Didn't do much, but when I did get an invite with the guys, I was always the caddy man, just driving around in a golf cart. that was my part of being a player.
Every golfer needs a caddy, yeah. So, you know, you mentioned being able to banter with fans online for the Heineken UCL Live. During your playing and coaching career, you've obviously seen the evolution of social media. How much do you see it impacting football, especially nowadays?
It's in a negative way, I'll say it impacts football. Obviously, the last couple of months, or I'll say that this whole season, there's been a lot of racial abuse online. And for me, that's, yeah, you know, when I was playing, I wasn't into all Instagram. I was more a bit on Twitter because you can, you know, interact with the fans, but not really taking it personal. But the abuse has been, it's been bad this year, you know, and for me, that's a minus point. I'll say, yeah, obviously players want to show what they're up to, giving the fans a bit of insight into their lives. But as a player, I think you need to be more focused on playing football and, yeah, stay more off social media. Mm.
So what are some of the early lessons that you've learned working with a Dutch amateur club, SV Robin Hood, and also as an Ajax Academy coach? What have you learned as a mentor now rather than a player?
Obviously with the amateurs it's totally different, you know. The first thing I've learned is how to get a group together so they can respect each other, because, you know, if you're coming in as an amateur player and another player shouts at you, there's always arguments, the training gets interrupted. And that, from my point of view, I could control it nicely, you know, let the players know, listen, we're all here to have fun, play the game, play with a smile on your face, and respect each other. And that's how we have to do it on the field, you know, even at an amateur level. So that, I got it quite well with the players. I let them learn about it. And now I see the difference. And for me, as a young coach, you know, starting to develop, getting into the game as a coach, you learn a lot of things, how you can do things differently from working with the Ajax Academy, because the levels are so different. You know, if I go to, for example, if I go to the under-16s, I said to them, listen, this is the exercise that we're going to do. This is the passing exercise that we're going to do. I just have to explain it once. It goes to it's like a machine. But with the amateurs, you have to show it step by step. Some players have to see it, and some players, they learn. They if you tell them, they get it quickly. So, you know, that as a young coach, I had to develop, you know, by showing an example and then let them do it, and how to motivate them, how to get intensity up. You know, just I'm a kind of, now that I see myself as an upcoming coach, I'm more of a coach that want players to play with a smile on their faces, you know, and let them enjoy the game, because we're there to enjoy it. It's supposed to be fun. You have to be happy when you're on the field, because there's so many things in the world that's going wrong at the moment. All the bombs, the pandemic, all that kind of things, you know, people suffering from hunger. There's not a lot of jobs, but once you're on that field, forget all about it and just enjoy it. Let all that energy come out and have fun. That's the way I see as a coach. You have to embrace your players, let them have that moment to enjoy themselves, express themselves on the field. And that's how I want to move forward as a coach.
And I'm sure it holds more weight to the young players knowing that you've played at the highest level before. And we're seeing more and more players turned coaches locally. The likes of Benny, Munip and Nomvetsa are doing great things for the AmaZulu team this season. What is the importance of backing young South African coaches? It's become a big topic very recently in the local game.
Yeah, it is important. I know a lot of club owners are not so keen on giving young upcoming coaches, unproven coaches the opportunity. But then again, if you look on the bright side, here's a young coach's hunger. He wants to succeed. And the only way he can do it is by giving him that opportunity, you know, out there and let him gain experience. Because the only way you can gain experience is when you have to swim in the deep end. You know, it's either you're going to drown or you're going to survive. So that's how I think club owners have to see it. You know, if a coach is not doing well, support him, give him the opportunity to work with a team. Support is the most important thing, and believe, you know, at the end of the day, club owners, they just think, yeah, if I get relegated, it's my money, you know. I'm going to put someone that's proven, that's done the job before. But, you know, nowadays, a lot of young coaches, if you look around in Europe, how many young coaches are breaking through at the moment, it's unbelievable, because you have to give him the chance. It's the same as a player. If a young boy comes up and he's 16 and he's good enough, give him that opportunity to play. That's the only way he's going to gain experience.
Definitely. Now, before we let you go, one last thing. You know, we've seen you linked with a couple coaching jobs this side. You obviously have links with Ajax, but what are some of your ambitions for your coaching career moving forward?
I haven't been so long in the coaching game. It's now 2.5 years. So for me, it's just, that's why I also wanted to start an amateur team. You know, it's just to get it confidence, being on the field, barking instructions to the players, you know, have fun with them. It's building it up step by step. Start as low as possible where you can make your mistakes, where you're allowed to make your mistakes, and you learn from your mistakes, and then move on to, you know, to a higher level. So it's I've planned it nicely out for myself. I'm not in a rush to jump, oh, I want to be a head coach at this club or that club. It's step by step learning. It's a process. It will take time, but eventually I'll get there, you know, even if I get there when I'm 50. And I got a picture right clear in my face. I want to coach at the highest level. I want to do it the right way, you know. I don't want to jump through hoops and, you know, the shortcuts. I want to learn. And that's how it's going so far, you know. For example, sometimes when I stand on the field with a boy at Ajax, and then they always come out and then they're like, coach, you can't pass 30 meters passes or do this or do that, you know. And for me as a coach, then you just have to, if you show the player, then he'll respect, you know, oh, you can do it. So if the coach tells me to do one thing and he can't do it himself, why am I going to do it? So it's also, you have to be active with the players as well, challenging them. And like I said, it's step by step. It's a long way, but you never know in football. It's who you know also that can get you into a job, you know. But for me, so far, it's going according to plan, and I'm at the best academy in the world that produce unbelievable players. So it's also a good place to start my coaching career.
Fantastic stuff. We will be watching your coaching career keenly this side. But thank you very much for joining me on the big interview presented to you proudly by Heineken. Bafana Bafana legend, Everton legend, and, you know, all around great guy who will come to dominate the coaching scene very, very soon. Mr. Stephen Pienaar, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, guys.
The Big Interview is a team effort driven by the following individuals at the SL Podcast. It is hosted and produced by Slu Paho. It is edited by Aiden Hewitt, with graphics provided by Nino Segaleni. Brought to you by Sokola Duma.